Man, that sunset is gorgeous.
Grill, patio, sunset. Hard to get better than that. Unless you're browsing Carvana's inventory while you soak it all in.
Oh, burger time.
So sit back, get comfortable. Carvana's got thousands of cars under $20,000 just waiting for you.
I could stay here forever.
Carvana, where car buying meets comfort meets convenience. Download the app or visit Carvana.com today. The comfort of your favorite seat is now your comfy car selling command center, thanks to Carvana.
It doesn't get any better than this.
Your favorite seat's the best spot in the house. Make it even better by entering your license plate or VIN and getting a real offer in minutes.
There really is no place like home.
And speaking of home, Carvana will pick up your car from yours after you finalize your offer. Visit Carvana.com or download the app and sell your car from your comfy place.
This is the John Fugelsang Podcast. This is Sirius XM Progress. I'm John Fugelsang. Welcome to the love fest that is, was, and continues to be Tell Me Everything, the little show here at What the Hell O'Clock that brings good trouble to the right-wing bubble. We are so glad you are with us for the next 3 hours. We're bringing you some quality broadcasting over here with some facts and some umbrage and some outrage and some empathy and just enough humor to make you wonder if we're doing it on purpose. We got a good one planned this evening. We will be joined by TV's Frank Conniff, star of Mystery Science Theater 3000. Also, David Rothkopf on the latest news with Israel and Iran and Ukraine funding. We're always happy to have Professor Rothkopf join us and bring up the general IQ in this place a bit. We have some cool new celebrity bookings that I don't think we're not allowed to announce yet, Chris, are we? We can't. It's not confirmed. We have a new Star Wars cast member. We have a really cool Star Wars cast member.
We've got C-3PO, folks.
We've had C-3PO. Do you remember right before lockdown we had Anthony Daniels? You and I started working together and you were drinking heavily because you had to work with me, so maybe you don't remember that period, but we had Anthony Daniels come in for his memoir, like right when we were jumping to nights. You've blotted it out, haven't you?
You know, since we've totally derailed the show.
I think what happened was somebody wiped your memory. That's what happened.
For some reason, I have this idea in my mind that one of the nicknames for 3PO was Goldenrod. Did Han Solo ever call him Goldenrod in like a pejorative way?
Yes, in Empire Strikes Back, he calls him Goldenrod.
In Empire, okay.
One scene. Yes, you're welcome. We have not had Harrison Ford on the show, but we've had Mark Hamill was on this show 3 or 4 times. And we've had, I don't know, Poe Dameron's done our show a couple times. Oscar Isaac. We've had a lot of Star Wars people on. C-3PO. General Hux. I can't really say the person who's going to come on. We've had a lot of Star Wars actors. Hopefully,
John Boyega?
A lot more. John Boyega's done our show. That is very correct. Haven't had a ton of actors from the prequels, but we've had a couple. And I'm trying to get Billy Dee Williams. We have not had Jar Jar Binks. We've had Cassian Andor. Diego Luna's done our show. Haven't had Billy Dee Williams yet.
Still Stellan Skarsgård?
Stellan Skarsgård has done our show. One of the bright lights.
Sorry, folks. There's no news today.
We're just going to... See, we had some fun during the pandemic.
Former guests.
Yes, listen to two tragic Gen Xers recounting people that briefly did their show in years past. Welcome. Let's party. There is a lot of news we need to get to. Joe Biden has limited oil drilling across 13 million acres of the Alaskan Arctic. Leadership of the Natural Resource Defense Council, that's the environmental organization that Robert Kennedy Jr. has long been affiliated with, they published an open letter begging him to stop his deeply stupid and destructive campaign. And don't you heard this? Google has fired more than 24 employees who publicly protested against their $1.2 billion cloud computing contract with the government of Israel. It's been a crazy one. That's not even the tip of the iceberg. We are going to get to it right now, and let's do a show. The great Thea Harper is our associate producer. Our executive producer is Chris Housel, who is scanning through our old calendar right now, finding more Star Wars cast members who have joined our show. I'm going to end the week cautiously, tentatively, hesitatingly, mildly praising Speaker of the House Mike Johnson. I really do think, for whatever calculated reason, he is making the right choice for the benefit of our country and our allies. okay, I said it. I can go on. The hardest part of my night is done. Now, this has been happening for a while, right? We've been watching this struggle all week. And can I just say how frustrating it has been watching the battle to get the majority of Republicans, to get a minority of Republicans to stop quoting Vladimir Putin imperialistic propaganda and just take care of our allies. And I have plenty of problems with our funding. Don't get me wrong. We are sending billions to Israel to destroy Palestine and sending millions to Palestine in aid to help them recover from the billions we're spending. You get where I'm going with this. But with the Ukraine funding, it's deeply important. And we have strong reason to believe there are several electeds who are compromised in some way and are so hell-bent on making sure Vladimir Putin's campaign of rape and mass slaughter can continue without any interruption. But a nearly unprecedented situation happened on the House floor when more Democrats than Republicans supported the rule to set up debate on this four-bill foreign aid package. This hardly ever happens. Rules don't get votes from the minority party. I've had a whole civics lesson on this. Most Republicans were very pleased about this. Most Republicans. This was truly bipartisan because Mike Johnson couldn't get all the Republicans to come along, and Democrats made it happen. The Rules Committee is usually, you know, leadership loyalists who vote along party lines and advance legislation. You've got your diehard Democrats, your diehard Republicans, and they just move stuff along. Let's see, Kevin McCarthy left us a little gift before he went off to that great lobbying party in the sky. He put Thomas Massie and Chip Roy on the panel last year to placate all the right-wingers. So they were not letting the vote move along. They were blocking because they think the only responsible thing to do is leave our allies holding the bag and let them get killed. We don't know why they want our allies to get killed, but boy, they have spent all week doing everything they can do to make sure that we do nothing. 55 House Republicans opposed their party's rule today, and it was all the right-wing Nazi clot caucus. It was Matt Gaetz and Marjorie Taylor Greene and Eli Crane and Bob Good. 39 Democrats opposed the measure, and mostly the progressives that we like. I mean, Israel aid has really divided people, and that's AOC, Barbara Lee from California, friend of the show Mark Pocan, friend of the show Jamie Raskin. All of our friends are mad about it, but the Dems on the House Rules Committee joined the Republicans to advance the foreign aid package for a vote tomorrow. The House has moved closer to finally resolving this issue, and here, clip A3, Minority Leader Hakeem Jeffries says, yeah, we're ready to support Mike Johnson's bills and save his life.
Democrats will provide a majority of our majority as it relates to funding Israel, humanitarian assistance, Ukraine, and our allies in the Indo-Pacific. It remains to be seen what Republicans will do in terms of meeting the national security needs of the American people, but it was important for House Democrats to make sure that the national security bills are going to be considered.
And hopefully done tomorrow. I mean, we talk all the time about how divided, how destructively gridlocked, divided our Congress is. This week, we've just seen it's the Republican Party itself that's gridlocked. This tiny House majority has been dead in the water because of their own side. And so finally, they had to throw their hardliners over the edge, work with Democrats, and do that thing our parents took for granted, bipartisan cooperation. This was Thomas Massie, Ralph Norman, and Chip Roy all voted against sending this to the floor. And that would have been enough to kill the package in normal times if Democrats didn't step in. Democrats saved Mike Johnson again today. They rescued him last night. They rescued him again this morning. They saved his whole little tiny package from dying in the Rules Committee, and they saved it again from dying on the House floor. Now, initially, Democrats held off on voting to advance the package. They waited until most Republicans had already voted. And you know why they did it? Axios had a pretty interesting tidbit on this. The Democrats deliberately held off on voting until after most Republicans had done it, just to show, so everyone could see, that Republicans would not have been able to pass these bills on their own. that the height of their division was there for all to see. Steny Hoyer said they wanted to make the point that it was Democrats that made it happen. Now, Hakeem Jeffries was asked about the chances that Democrats will bail out Mike Johnson. Because we know what Marjorie Taylor Greene and the Matt Gaetzes are going to do now. Now that he's committed the sin of working with Democrats to help our allies, they're going to move ahead with their motion to vacate. Here's future Speaker Jeffries.
Moscow, Marjorie Taylor Greene, Massey, and Gosar are quite a group. And I'm sure that will play some role in our conversation. But central to the conversation, the prerequisite to the conversation, is to make sure that the national security legislation in totality is passed by the House of Representatives.
Okay, so what happens next? Democrats have said for a while that, yeah, we'll probably save Mike Johnson if they try to fire him again with the motion to vacate. I mean, quite honestly, I think a lot of Democrats want this to happen because they just they don't have to do any work. They can just show here is the chaos of the Republican Party. It's amazing how the far right wing of this party won't stop making campaign ads for Democrats. Susan Glasser had a great piece in The New Yorker. She said on Wednesday, Johnson sounded like Republicans used to sound before Trump, before Marjorie Taylor Greene, the Trump favorite who talks of Jewish space lasers and echoes Russian propaganda about Ukrainian Nazis became a force in the House. A Republican like the ones who once bashed Democrats for not being tough enough on Putin. Listening to Johnson brought to mind the scene in Lord of the Rings when the evil spell possessing the good King Theoden is broken and he suddenly returns to himself, an accommodationist no more, revivified, ready to fight. Yeah, Susan, I'm with you, except it's probably only just this one time. You know, Jim Himes, Democratic representative from Connecticut, said, I think Mike Johnson made some hard choices. And he's putting his job in peril as a result. And I want to tell you, I give Mike Johnson credit for this. I do. I don't agree with him politically on much of anything, but I do think he's showing real leadership here. He's showing real integrity here. I don't see a way for him to be a weasel. And I don't see how this endears him to Donald Trump, unless Donald Trump is in the mood now for Republicans who are merely competent. And he had no other choice. I mean, if he did nothing, he'd be fired. And if he does something, they're going to try to fire him. So now if he does something, Democrats will keep him from being fired. That was really it. He was sort of forced to be on the right side of history here. Not 6 months on the job. And this guy's being held up as the profile of courage. But and again, I respect what he did. But please understand, he was doomed no matter what. Because if he didn't do this and let the whole thing crumble, they were going to get rid of him anyway. And Democrats wouldn't help him. Now they'll try to get rid of him. Democrats will save him. More Democrats supported this measure than Republicans, 165 to 151. The Democratic votes were necessary to overcome the opposition from the House Speaker's own party. This doesn't happen, my friends. And this is going to save lives. This is going to stabilize the Ukrainian forces because they're running really low on ammunition and they are getting ready for Russia to start a new offensive that's going to be even more violent. And it's also interesting because Joe Biden gets some credit for this. The White House strategy has been Biden and the team slowly courting Mike Johnson behind the scenes. And they've kind of leaked about this quite a bit. The administration had several closed-door briefings for Mike Johnson and some other lawmakers to update them on the situation in Ukraine days after Johnson became speaker. And Joe Biden, apparently, behind the scenes, has gone out of his way to make sure Mike Johnson knows what the human cost is of leaving Ukraine twisting in the wind. Their efforts to privately push Johnson towards doing something, this is what Joe Biden's done on a lot of issues. He really doesn't like to come out and say the things that make liberals happy. He likes to work behind the scenes and forge compromise and alliances with people who disagree. I don't know how he does it. And I have a lot of issues with Joe Biden, but my friends, he is beyond competent. He's really a guy who gets shit done. Let's bring it closer to home. Jury selection in Donald Trump's New York hush money trial, which should be called a campaign finance fraud trial. It's done. 18 New Yorkers, 12 jurors, 6 alternates. Maybe you heard. This is the case where Donald Trump tried to keep important information away from voters on the eve of the 2016 election. It's a trial about the integrity of our election system. It's a very important trial. And believe me, in a couple of weeks, everyone's going to be talking about this. Its popularity is going to grow and grow like Wordle. The opening statements are going to begin in the first ever criminal trial of a former president, most likely on Monday. And according to Maggie Haberman, he fell asleep again. That's what you want to know. Come on, who cares about the damn jury? Maggie Haberman writes, Trump appears to have fallen asleep in court again. It happened several times just now. His eyes were closed for extended periods and his head dropped down twice. I'm going to say this again. Please, can we not mock the man for falling asleep? I realize it's hypocritical. I realize his number one slur for the president is Sleepy Joe, and here he is doing it himself. And I realize he's a 77-year-old man who's not used to have the discipline to sit still for 4 hours at a time. But please don't mock him. Please. All three of his wives have had to get through humiliating experiences by falling asleep, too. Now, just before the day began, this was day 4, Donald Trump was out there complaining about how he's not allowed to recklessly trash talk and intimidate his enemies of the moment. And wah, wah, wah. Give a listen to Man Baby. A5.
People know it's very unfair. The gag order has to come off. People are allowed to speak about me, and I have a gag order, just to show you how much more unfair it is. And the conflict has to end with the judge. The judge has a conflict, the worst I've ever seen. And it has to end with the judge. The gag order has to come off. I should be allowed to speak. Every time I come out to speak to you, I want to be open because we did absolutely nothing wrong. I showed you yesterday 30 stories, 32 stories of experts, legal experts, and I don't have one.
These are right-wing articles his staff printed out for him.
Experts saying very strongly there's no case, this case should have been brought. Trump did nothing wrong, and they say it strongly. Trump did nothing wrong. So they ought to get rid of the conflict with the judge, because that's something that he cannot do anything about. It's wrong.
All right, you get the idea, right? It was just a lot of that. It makes it more fun. You know, folks, if they could put Donald Trump on trial for committing campaign finance fraud by bribing the porn star he banged while his wife was recovering from childbirth, they can do it to any of us, including you gullible MAGA idiots, too. You should send your billionaire a check. Now, yes?
Sorry, I don't mean to interrupt.
Please.
Did you hear what else people say he's been doing in the courtroom?
I have heard what else people say he's been doing in the courtroom.
What Ben Mycelis over at Midas Touch says that he's...
Multiple sources have talked about...
Can I just go and play it? I can play the Ben Mycelis.
You want to just play it? All right, go ahead and play it. I'll have a comment on it. Go ahead. I have issues with this guy. I have issues with this. This is all conjecture and hearsay. This is gossip and rumor. But go ahead and play friend of the show, Ben Mycelis.
And, you know, what I'm hearing from my sources as well is that... You know, and I'm hearing from credible sources who know what's going on in the courtroom. And what I'm hearing is that take it for what it's worth, but that Donald Trump is actually farting in the courtroom, and that it's very stinky around him. It's a putrid odor in the courtroom, and that Trump's lawyers are like repulsed by the scent and the smell.
Yeah. So. You glad you played that, sir? You glad we put that
look
completely unconfirmed conjecture out there in our airwaves?
I am glad that we played it instead of said it ourselves.
I am too. Well, I want to point out to our listeners that these reports of Donald Trump's flatulence whenever he does fall asleep in the courtroom, and it's happened apparently 3 or 4 times now, that he loses control and begins to break wind. I want to remind everyone, this is just gossip and rumor. Gossip and rumor confirmed by multiple witnesses, but still, it's gossip and it's heavily sourced gossip and rumor. And I'm not going to say the president has horrible flatulence, but a guy caught fire today outside that courtroom. That's I'm not going to say they're linked, but you know what? Here's the thing, but I'm very excited to bring on an adult like Professor Rothkopf in just a moment. But Donald Trump's last experience with a Manhattan jury didn't go so good. After the E. Jean Carroll case, he had to pay $83 million in damages. And a lot of right-wingers don't like that he's going on trial and as a Manhattan jury because Manhattan, in case you didn't know, voted in favor of Joe Biden over Trump by 87% to 12%. So now the belief is there's no way Donald Trump can get a fair trial. And I agree. He's had over 7 violations of the court gag order. 30 days per violation, he could be in jail for half a year. And it's not going to happen. This thing's going to happen 6 to 8 weeks. And all of the jurors say they can be impartial and unbiased about the facts. Many, of course, have an opinion on Donald Trump that could get in the way. So they're angry. Kyle Becker said, there is zero chance of getting 12 fair-minded individuals to assess President Trump's guilt or innocence in a Manhattan jury pool. And they're right, folks. How can you really tell when Manhattan went for Biden 87% to 12%? I guess what our Republican friends are saying is, in the future, Donald Trump should commit his crimes in jurisdictions where he's more popular. We want to know what you think. We are at 866-997-4748, 866-997-GRIT. We'll be right back with David Rothkopf in just a moment. This is SiriusXM.
Welcome to Fail Better, David Duchovny's new podcast with Lemonada Media. On Fail Better, David, who has experienced both low and high-profile failures throughout his life, explores the vast world of failure, how it holds us back, propels us forward, and ultimately shapes our lives. Each week, he'll chat with guests like Ben Stiller, Bette Midler, and more about how our perceived failures have actually been our biggest catalysts for growth, revelation, and even healing. Through these conversations, he hopes listeners can learn how to embrace the opportunity of failure and fail better together. Fail Better is out now wherever you get your podcasts. Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress-them-on-the-third-date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app today to get free delivery on your first 3 orders, while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
So as you guys know, Israel conducted a strike in Iran early in the morning, late last night, and they have vowed to retaliate against Iran for the missile and drone attack on Israel after Israel bombed their embassy in Syria. The U.S. is obviously worried that all these counterattacks could trigger much wider regional escalation. Earlier today at a G7 summit in Italy, I just want to play this really quick. Secretary of State Blinken was cagey at best when asked to comment on last night's airstrike near the Iranian city of Isfahan.
Well, 2 things. Again, I'm not going to speak to these reported events. All I can say is that for our part and for the entire G7, our focus has been on de-escalation, on avoiding a larger conflict. And actually, that's been true since day one after the horrific events of October 7th. A big part of our approach has been to prevent the conflict from spreading, to avoid escalation everywhere. And that's a common policy across the G7. And it's very much our approach now.
Now, I'm a big fan of David Rothkopf. We're always grateful anytime we can get him on the show. He's CEO of the Rothkopf Group. It's a media company. They make great podcasts, including Deep State Radio, which he hosts. He's written many books, including the absolutely essential American Renaissance, the inside story of how the deep state saved the nation. It will make you feel very patriotic in the age of Trump. But David Rothkopf, for my money, has been consistently writing the best op-ed pieces about what is happening with Israel, Gaza, and America, and what the risks are consistently in the Daily Beast. I've got like half a dozen tabs open in Safari just with his different essays. His most recent one, you have to read it. It's called U.S. Must Pull Out All the Stops to Avoid a Regional War After Iran Attacks Israel. It is always a great pleasure, even on a scary day, to welcome David Rothkopf back to SiriusXM.
You're very kind. It's always a pleasure to be here. And that's not my most recent one. Oh. I had one come out today on the aftermath of the Israeli attack on Iran.
That's right.
What we could expect from that and whether that makes the situation more dangerous or not. And I talked to a bunch of experts and their conclusion was We dodged a bullet this week, but the next time could be worse.
And that's a piece called Iran's Nuclear Program Could Speed Up After Strikes with Israel. I wasn't lying, David. I've got like 9 of your columns up at all times to keep me abreast of all of this because it's so scary.
To help you sleep at this late hour. Yeah.
No, this is actually the story that's keeping me up at night more than anything else happening in our world today. But I must say, maybe I'm premature in this, Professor, but I'm going to bed at the end of this week a little bit more reassured that maybe, just maybe, both the leaders of Iran and Israel know that neither side wants this escalation right now.
Well, that right now that you offer at the end of that statement is doing an awful lot of heavy lifting because there's still a great deal of tension between Israel and Iran. I think, you know, this week is momentous in that it's the first week in which we've ever seen an attack on Israel directly from Iran.
That's right.
It raised the stakes. It made Israel question whether their deterrent strategies work. But of course, the way that attack turned out, it also sent a strong message to Iran, because they launched, you know, 300 missiles. And effectively, none of them hit a target because they were interdicted by air defense systems, including those that involved the United States, the United Kingdom, France, Jordan, and reportedly with some help from the Saudis, and in addition to the Israelis. So the message to the Iranians was, you're going to have a hard time hitting and hurting Israel. And so that will force them back to the drawing board. And then when the Israelis reached out and responded, again, with an attack that was designed more to send a message than do damage, so they launched an attack that hit radar installations around Iranian nuclear facilities in Isfahan, the Iranians got a message, which is the Israelis can strike deep into their country, and they need to find a strategy in the future that's going to help create better deterrence for them. And the point of this article was that I talked to a bunch of experts, and not all of them said that this would force Iran to accelerate its nuclear weapons program, but 3 out of 4 of them did, and the one that didn't said it might. And so, you know, if you look at that, then you think, well, the next time these two tangle could be a whole different picture.
That's what the real fear is. As soon as you say deterrence, that's where my mind goes. Now, of course, we had a peace deal with Iran, forged not by Barack Obama, but by a multinational coalition. Many, many countries came together to help build the Iran nuclear deal. Our military consistently reported back that Iran was complying with the terms of the deal. It was very popular. It made our world safer. And Donald Trump promised he would tear it up. And he did. Besides the fact that why would any country ever trust us to enter into any kind of peace agreement right now? This is the concern, that these kind of exchanges, that having an actual Israeli missile land deep into Iranian territory, will escalate the once stalled Iran nuclear plan, which nobody outside of Iran wants.
Look, Donald Trump did a lot of stupid things as president, and he did a lot of dangerous things as president. But he didn't do many things that were more stupid and more dangerous than pulling out of the Iran nuclear deal. And, you know, when that deal took place, Iran was kind of frozen, perhaps a year away from getting a nuclear weapon. And there were all sorts of inspection protocols involved that would help ensure that they didn't violate the terms of the agreement. It was an imperfect agreement, but it was far better than nothing. How do we know that? Because Trump pulled out. We now have nothing. And the current estimates are that Iran could enrich nuclear fuel to weapons-grade status within about a week. In other words, they're so close that it's just for a lack of, you know, making the decision that gets them to weapons-grade nuclear fuel. Now, they have to develop the right kind of missile delivery systems. They have to develop the right kind of bomb warhead. But the general feeling is that they're kind of weeks, maybe a month or two away from being able to have a nuclear weapon.
Yeah.
And that, of course, changes the picture dramatically. And, you know, it's one of those situations where, you know, they launched 300 projectiles at Israel and three out of 300 got through. Well, if those three were nuclear, the damage would have been catastrophic.
Exactly. Hitting a random part of a base and causing no damage would not be the case. Are you at all surprised, Professor, that the Biden administration has not made any public overtures towards the Iranian leadership in the past 3 years to try to renegotiate the Iranian deal? I have to admit that I kind of hoped that we got back into the Paris Accords when we got a Democratic president. I was kind of hoping we might make an effort to get back into this agreement as well.
There were efforts to get back into the agreement, and there were some obstacles that came up. There has been more dialogue with the Iranians, and you saw that in the course of the past couple of weeks. You know, prior to launching its attack on Israel, the Iranians communicated to their neighbors in the region, that then communicated back to us, that, you know, they were going to do this. They launched the attack, of course, with these very slow moving drones, which again telegraphed the attack. But as the attack was unfolding, they reached out to the United States via the Swiss embassy, via their embassy in Switzerland, and said, you know, this is coming, this is limited, we're as far as we're concerned, this is the end, let's not escalate this. And it's that kind of back channel dialogue that has been extremely helpful to keeping this thing from spinning out of control. And of course, the Biden administration, I mean, you got to thank God they're the administration right now, because they have successfully put pressure on the Israelis not to hit back in a way that escalates this.
That's right.
And, you know, you saw that, you know, when you were reading your opening. The Israelis and the United States both have essentially made no comment on this Israeli attack. The Iranians have made no comment on this attack. Iranian media has portrayed it in a kind of a negligible way.
It's a kerfuffle.
Why? Because everybody wants this problem to go away for now. They want to turn down the heat. They realize that a regional war could be absolutely catastrophic. Both sides have plenty of reason to be concerned. There are thousands and thousands of missiles in Lebanon controlled by Hezbollah, which is controlled by Iran, that could be in Israel in minutes. And the Iranians now look out at the region and they see Arab states, Gulf states, the United States, some NATO allies, all allied against them. And although they have Russia on their side, they're quite isolated. So both sides, you know, want to think better of this. Last point regarding your sleep on this weekend.
Please.
Gaza is still a problem. And it hasn't gone away. It has just been distracted from. And now it looks like the Netanyahu government has decided that they are going to go with a large operation into Rafah. So, you know, we could be back having the discussion we were having a week ago about what a ghastly situation that is. And that's not a good thing for anybody, especially the people of Gaza. And so though we've been distracted, it's time to return our attention to that.
I want to ask you about that, but I have one more question pertaining to Iran, because I think both Iran's leaders and Israel's leader are in a rather similar precarious position. You know, in Iran, the majority of the population is under the age of 50, And these Ayatollahs know they're not going to be able to get away with being an ultra-conservative, orthodox, theocratic regime forever. We've seen the protests of young people and women against Iran getting seemingly greater every couple of years. And we've witnessed the same kind of protests against the Netanyahu regime. A year ago, it was young people and leftists. Today, he's being picketed by every strata of Israeli society. To a certain degree, yes, neither side wants this to escalate, but also the leadership of both of these conservative religious societies, they want to keep their jobs too, don't they?
They do. But of course, one's a democracy-ish and one is not a democracy. When I say ish, it's because there are a number of Palestinians who live within the borders of Israel or the borders controlled by Israel, including the West Bank and Gaza, who are disenfranchised. But having said that, it is, you know, a democratic country, and those protests are designed to produce changes in the political process there that could oust Netanyahu. Iran is run by these authoritarian mullahs that you've referred to, has been since 1979. So it's, you know, 45 years. And they've got demonstrations too, and they've got other problems. You know, the mm-hmm. economy of Iran is in a bad way, and the society is deeply divided, not very low beneath the surface. You had this phenomenon months ago of women saying, "No, I'm not going to wear the hijab," going out in the street, and some of them meeting really unhappy ends, either in jail or worse. And that kind of thing, you know, that kind of boldness,
yeah,
suggests a kind of weakness in the government and its grip on things, as you suggest. So yeah, both governments are weak, but that doesn't encourage me so much. Weak governments tend to do whatever they can to survive, including draconian things that can cost lives or start wars.
Draconian things like using starvation of civilians as a weapon of war. I think this is going to be a big theme that we'll be hearing in our national debate quite a bit for the next 2 months. And there's already people saying that any increased American aid to Israel at this point would be illegal because of this seemingly deliberate campaign to use starvation as a tool of war. Now, obviously, we're having this talk right when the aid package is going to tentatively, finally, be approved tomorrow. You began the month with a great piece in The Beast called "Biden Should Suspend Offensive Military Aid to Israel Immediately." We're all really happy to see Mike Johnson and Democrats working together, but what we're really talking about here, aren't we, is more billions being sent to Israel to decimate the civilian population, with millions to Gazans to help them recover from the billions we're spending to help decimate them.
Well,
stop me if I'm way off track here.
No, you're not. It's a very troubling development. In my perspective, the U.S. support for Israel in the face of what it's been doing in Gaza. I'll say a couple things about where we are now. One, if you and I were talking on Monday morning, neither of us would have had on our bingo card, as we tend to say in social media these days, Mike Johnson emerging as the hero of the week, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, Mike Johnson as a profile in Courage was not something I expected. But thanks in large part to support from some Democrats and heavy pressure, I believe, from people familiar with the intelligence about what is happening in Ukraine, where he saw that the delays in funding Ukraine could lead to a loss of Ukraine in the course of the months ahead, he decided that he was going to stand up to the Freedom Caucus, stand up to, you know, nutty Marjorie Taylor Greene and the rest of those characters, but also to stand up to Trump, which, given that he was visiting with Trump last Friday, mm-hmm. is really quite surprising. And, you know, he even said Trump said, you know, we'll have to see how things work out with Mike Johnson after Johnson said, no, we're going to proceed with this. The tiny minority of nut jobs in the Republican, I mean, there are a lot of nut jobs in the Republican caucus, but I mean the most extreme nut jobs, who I refuse to call conservatives, as many papers do.
Amen.
Because they're not conservative. They're extremists, right? Yeah. They thought they had Mike Johnson by the short and curly ones, and they did not, because the Democrats said, no, we're gonna support this guy, right? And I suspect what's going to happen is that the votes will go through, and that the money will be freed up, and that the Senate will adapt its bill to make it so that this can go to the desk of the president, be signed. And whether it's a loan to Ukraine or not, it doesn't matter. As far as the aid to Israel goes, the amount has gone up. A chunk of the aid is for humanitarian purposes. The law that you referred to says we can't provide offensive military weapons to a country that is impeding humanitarian aid flows. And we shouldn't. And that law ought to be enforced. The problem that the administration has faced, and I have a degree of sympathy for them, although much, much less than perhaps they would hope, is that they realize that one of the reasons to have those offensive weapons is to create a deterrent against Iran. And that's a real issue. That's not a fake issue. So it's not just offensive weapons. It's
true enough.
Offensive weapons that they can use against the people of Gaza and are using against the people of Gaza. And I think that until the United States draws, you know, the proverbial line in the sand there and says, look, you're not going to get any more of this aid money for us if you conduct large-scale operations in Gaza that have high civilian casualties. Mm. And, you know, if you narrow it down, you just go after Hamas, you make a good faith and demonstrable attempt to get aid flows into Gaza for the 2 million people who are on the verge of starvation or who are actually starving, and you make a good faith attempt to reduce civilian casualties, fine, we'll support it. But we're the only country in the world that has the leverage, and the situation is so ghastly that we need to use the leverage. And for a lot of the reasons that we've seen this week, that's a difficult challenge for the administration, but I think it's a moral imperative. And I really hope that we keep the pressure up, that what happens in Rafah that's planned is not the disaster we see, and that we can surge the aid into the people of Gaza and avert the worst of the likely and developing famine that's taking place there now.
David Rothkopf, it is always a great pleasure. David is the host of Deep State Radio, a podcast I highly recommend. And buy the book American Resistance and thank me later, the inside story of how the deep state saved the nation. Professor, it's always a pleasure. You are writing the best stuff of anybody about the situation in Israel right now, and I hope we can get you back again as the situation continues to unfold. Thank you so much for beginning your weekend with us.
Thank you, John. Anytime, and I hope despite all this, you manage to sleep this weekend.
I'm feeling a little bit better about a few things, and that's more than I had on Monday. Thank you again. We're going to take a quick break. We'll be back in just a moment with your calls at 866-997-4748. This is Progress.
CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car. That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way car buying should be.
Man, that sunset is gorgeous.
Grill, patio, sunset. Hard to get better than that. Unless you're browsing Carvana's inventory while you soak it all in.
Oh, burger time.
So sit back, get comfortable. Carvana's got thousands of cars under $20,000 just waiting for you.
I could stay here forever.
Carvana, where car buying meets comfort, meets convenience. Download the app or visit Carvana.com today.
You know, the only thing I love more than people who voted for Obama and then voted for Trump is Frank Conniff, a man who began his career with the Peabody Award-winning Comedy Central series Mystery Science Theater 3000, one of the funniest comics in the game, worked on Sabrina the Teenage Witch and The Drew Carey Show. He is the best deadpan in all of stand-up, and I love working with this man. TV's Frank, welcome back.
Hey, hey, hey.
Hello, sir. How are you? Hey.
I'm good. I'm good. Thanks for having me on.
Thanks for being on, Frank. I'm always honored when you join us. And I want to know, I'm glad I follow you on Facebook. I'm glad that you marked yourself safe from Donald Trump's flatulence earlier today. I saw that you had some very good jokes about it.
Actually, recently. Well, yeah. you're stretching the term very good, but I did say that when he farted, he came close to revealing his number two, and which people are hoping for, and then I said on Truth Social he denied that he supplied it, which is very stupid. And then I apologized because I did really lowbrow Trump jokes, and I apologized that I didn't do more of them.
I hope that I
know it's not going to happen, but I would love it if for the next 4 weeks mainstream media is saturated with Donald Trump farting references. You can't say if he farts in public or anything like that or falls asleep, you cannot say it enough. It must be repeated over and over. I love that he fell asleep again too. I mean,
again, he just doesn't care. He just doesn't care. I mean,
and it must be true because Maggie Haberman has been the one reporting on it, and she's like been kind of a Trump suck up a lot of her career. So
I mean, let's be honest, Frank. We had Maggie Haberman as a guest back when we did the TV show at Current TV, and I've always gotten along with her well. But for years, I mean, Trump leaked to her in the White House. He would leak to her. Yeah. They were pals.
Well,
and what I heard
he
all over the place
leaked,
was that he was glaring at her in the courtroom because she reported it, and he was glaring at her in the courtroom like she had betrayed him.
Yeah, that's an indication too of like maybe the tide turning in terms of people's reaction to Trump. Like, people have just had enough of it. Even the people who were kind of depending on him for their livelihood have just had enough of him, hopefully.
Well, you know, when Donald Trump glares at you like that, you know, it's silent, but it can be deadly.
Exactly.
Oh, these are nice people.
I don't think
his
fart was all that silent. What's his name? The Michael Cohen has already like talked at length about how Donald Trump stinks to high heaven, that he's really smelly, and people have speculated that he wears Depends and he shits himself constantly. This is very important discourse, is what I'm saying.
I want to talk
about this stuff more.
I want to remind all of our listeners, none of this has been confirmed. It's all just rumor, heavily sourced rumors confirmed by multiple witnesses,
right.
But it's just rumor. Got to say that.
But Trump is so worried about his image, he's going to say that the P tape is true just to make himself seem better to people.
You know what's interesting is, do you think he'll ever acknowledge it? Will he ever go on the defense? I don't think he can take the bait. If he was smart, he'd never bring it up. He'd let the story go away. It'll be dismissed as a rumor, and they'll say, oh, the liberals accused him of that, and it's a lie, hoax. I don't think Donald Trump's going to be able to keep his mouth shut. I think he's going to have to come out and be the first president to deny public flatulence in the history of our republic, Frank.
Yeah, it's certainly possible. And I'm sure we've had some heavily farting presidents in our great American history.
Let's talk a little bit about Grover Cleveland and William Howard Taft. We can do this. We're adults.
Yes. These are people that cut some big ones in their time, I'm sure.
But even, but in fairness, those presidents did not have to deal with highly processed food the way Donald Trump's ruined colon does. We can't rule that out.
Right.
We talk so much about having a healthy diet and the problem of ultra processed food. So, yeah, I would imagine Donald Trump's particular emissions are much more toxic than 19th century presidential emissions.
His farting is as far as being the biggest farter of all time, it's the only case where he's ever won the popular vote. I mean, it's definitely happening, you know. But you know what? I was actually thinking, though, you know how, like, when you hear about him falling asleep and farting, you kind of wish that it was televised, you know. Mm-hmm. But, like, on the other hand, I was thinking, like, if it was televised, like, maybe he wouldn't have fallen asleep. Like, you know what I mean? Because
I do too, yeah.
He's very aware of, if there are cameras on him, he'd be very aware of it.
I agree.
And,
I agree.
But now there's no cameras, so he's just relaxing and farting. And like, oh, fuck. You know what? And he's complaining about how cold it is in the, you know, it was so cold in there, they actually taped a Letterman show. Okay, little inside joke for you.
But that's why it's cold. It's cold because of him. They're keeping it cold to keep him awake. I'm convinced of it. Yeah,
possible. Yeah.
But I got to say, I hope I'm never so debased and defiled in this life that I've been through so many court trials that I'm falling asleep during one of them. I got to say, that's a level of big dick energy. I have to hand it to the man. I'd be terrified. Yeah. He can't even keep his eyes open. Yeah. He's like Melania on the wedding night.
And in fact, you know, it's so cold in that courtroom, they found one of the Lufthansa heist guys hanging in there. I mean,
oh, really? I didn't know. Yes. It's so cold in that room. You can see Donald Trump's nipples poking out through three layers of Spanx under his suit. I agree.
Yes.
We could do this all night. We got a lot of callers, Frank. You want to talk to some of our evil army of the night about the news of the week?
Yes, certainly. Certainly.
Let's do it. We are at 866. 997-4748. We ask you to make your comments as brief and succinct as you can. Wayne in Michigan on line 8. Thank you for waiting all evening. You're on SiriusXM with TV's Frank.
Hi, John.
Hey.
Hi, Frank. I'll be seeing you in Chicago at the Sexy Liberal Tour.
Can't wait.
And what I wanted to do was talk about Mershon and how he could court from Trump.
Okay.
Best way to do it is to put Trump on a busload of juvie offenders from Queens, ride him out to Rikers to have a meeting with convicts in the old scared straight stuff.
Oh, yeah. Man.
Remember those movies from the 80s?
Oh,
I would
totally,
love to see an updated scared straight where it's a bunch of urban teens and Donald Trump having some convicts come out and scream at them. You want to be like me?
If he's lucky, he could get the hostages. You know, the January 6th hostages? They could come out and tell them all about their new boyfriends and stuff.
Now, let's stay away from the prison rape jokes. Let's not do that. But I'm still with you on the rest of it.
Okay.
But I think Donald Trump would have a good rejoinder to the scared straight people who would say, do you want to end up like us in jail? And he would say, I'm white and I'm rich. I'm not going to jail. So exactly. I don't have to worry about it.
I don't need to be scared straight. I have been straight my entire life. People say, sir, you're so straight. I say, I'm strictly AC, people. Strictly AC.
He also probably tell them that they're amateurs compared to him.
Yeah, he probably
Yeah, that's
would.
True. Very true. And you know, if he ever ends up in prison, he's going to be cutting an onion into tiny people with a razor blade. Hey, it's my second Goodfellas reference of the day.
Two Goodfellas references in 5 minutes. I'm so delighted by this. Wayne, thank you so much for the call, man. Oh, go ahead, please.
I also want to say one thing about Marjorie Taylor Greene.
Please.
Starting to call her Mammy Yoakum Green because, like, the old Cap character, the turned-up MAGA hat, the shotgun on the porch, the eye has spoken.
I knew Mammy.
I bow down before you that with the Al Cap reference. I love it.
Seriously. Normally, I only do Lil Abner references when I'm trolling for millennials. So that's well done.
Normally, I just say Marjorie is a waste of Spanx.
And Al Cap, by the way.
Oh, you buried the lead.
Al Cap, by the way, was one of our original TV, horrible TV conservatives. Probably the only one old enough to remember this, but he would be on talk shows all the time spewing conservative hate. And apparently he was a big sexual assaulter, too. But a good artist. Good artist.
Well, I knew that, Frank, because when I was a teenager, I saw the excellent documentary Imagine John Lennon, which shows the scene during the bed-in when they just decided, like as a, I don't know what, as just a publicity stunt, John and Yoko were doing this bed-in, and they bring in Al Capp to sit there and have a debate, and it just descends to, like, him berating them, and he's racist. He calls Yoko Madam No, and it's just really ugly, and it goes ugly fast.
Awful. You know, you can probably find clips on YouTube of him on the David Susskind show, and all of those shows from that era where he was just, he would have been like, he would have had his own show on Fox News if he were.
Oh, absolutely. Wayne, thank you so much for the call. Let's go to Holly calling from Los Angeles, where I am joining you from this evening. Holly, welcome. You're on Sirius XM.
Hi. No, I'm calling from Lafayette, Louisiana. I would like
Sorry. L.A. threw me off. L.A. is Louisiana, not L.A. where I am. Right. Welcome. Now I'm jealous. I wish I was in Louisiana.
Anyways, James and his 42 miles of walls. While women are dying in parking lots, as you said, I'm a registered nurse. I am just about apoplectic reading about these women being turned around while they're bleeding out and saying that there are security guards in hospitals turning them away. Not doctors or nurses, security guards.
Yes.
This is a crisis beyond a crisis, and we need to vote. I can't believe he calls himself a progressive.
Voted
for Obama, and now can vote for Donald Trump?
Can you believe it? I mean, this is go ahead, Frank.
Well, there are people, and there's a kind of left wing, and I put quotes around left wing, but there is, and some of them are friends of mine who have gone so left wing that they're on you meet on the right, and then suddenly you're sympathetic to Trump, and you consider Trump like anti-establishment or whatever. And
because he's not
really
like Hillary.
Disturbing.
I mean, Trump's literally a millionaire at birth racist who steals from veterans with a fraud online university and calls women pieces of ass. But at least he's not Hillary Clinton. You're exactly right. Now, the AP has a great story today about all of these complaints that pregnant women have been turned away from U.S. emergency rooms after the repeal of Roe v. Wade. One woman miscarried in the lobby restroom of a Texas emergency room because the front desk staff would not check her in. Another woman in Florida learned her fetus had no heartbeat the day after a security guard turned her away from the hospital. In North Carolina, a woman gave birth in a car after an emergency room refused to give her an ultrasound and the baby died. Federal law requires ERs to treat or stabilize patients who are in active labor, but some of these doctors post-Dobbs have been so terrified they have turned women away, especially poor women who don't speak English have been turned away from ERs. And that guy thinks it's just dandy because Trump built 47 miles of wall.
And John, as you've pointed out before, that this isn't about women not being able to get abortions. It's about poor women not being able to get abortions.
Amen.
Because a woman, anyone of means, any Republican woman can get an abortion anytime they want. Woman who's affluent enough can get an abortion whenever. And you know, they had I don't know if you mentioned this ever, but on Fox the other day, this guy that I used to know him back in the day, Mark Simone, who's a radio. I knew him when he was just a music radio DJ, and he's a conservative radio guy now. He's on Fox News.
Okay.
He was like, hey, it's not a big deal to just have to drive 3 hours to get an abortion.
Oh, I know.
You know,
I know.
Just these people are beyond.
And the majority of women who terminate pregnancies are mothers. They already have children. Right. Poor woman who works 90 hours a week can't get in her car with or without her children and cross state lines whenever she feels like it to have a procedure. They're punishing more women with greater poverty.
And, you know, part of like Trump's rebuttal to all this and Republican rebuttal to is just something they made up about women having abortions in the ninth month, or they give birth to the baby.
Yeah, it's all lies.
And then they abort it. It's just a thing they made up. But what really sucks is, you know, Trump will say that, and then the media will focus on all this other shit.
What really sucks
is
that Trump's been spreading this lie for over 5 years, that they deliver babies, wrap them in swaddling clothes, and then kill them. And the mainstream media lets him get away with it. Holly, we have hijacked your call. Holly, I'm so sorry. Let me give it back to you. You're the RN.
I just want to say a few more things, and I'll let you go. Here in Louisiana, now OBGYN will not see a woman who is pregnant until her second trimester because they are so afraid of problems in the first trimester.
Right.
And then the 3 hours that this guy says women can drive to go get an abortion, not if you're in the South. And how would they like it if they had to drive 3 hours to buy an AR-15?
Thank
All right,
you.
Gentlemen. Thank you.
Yeah.
Jesus,
oh, great
I
point.
Love you. Holly, yeah. Call more. I love you. Oh,
I know. Great. Since you're an RN, I knew you would kick ass, but you kicked ass even more than I thought you would.
I'd like to point out Donald Trump cannot spell RN or OBGYN. 866-997-4748. Let me go to Brian in Oregon on line 7. Brian, you're on with TV's Frank. Thanks for your patience.
Hi, Frank. Hi, John. Man,
hey.
He was a great, what a great call, contrast to James from Washington.
Listen,
man,
James in Washington, if you're still listening, I hope you'll call in. We can debate more. I know you mean well, but holy shit, dude, you are better than what you're voting for. Go ahead, Brian.
I would say I don't get the impression that guy means well. There's some of these wing nuts like that guy's become or whatever. In Washington State, have shot out power plants, you know, power.
You're right.
Substations and that kind of thing, and so God knows what his real story is. I wouldn't believe a word that guy says.
Good. Fair enough.
Yeah. Anyways, and the whole abortion. I mean, the obscenity of it all is just hard to really get your mind around what this country's doing to these people.
Obscenity is the word. Absolutely.
Yeah, but it's people who've never put themselves in the position of a woman, people who don't care. And again, this is the triumph of Jerry Falwell.
And people who don't even care about abortions either.
They don't care about abortion because they're not calling for increased access to birth control. They don't care about preventing abortion, controlling
women. They resent women who have jobs and go out in the world. They want all women to be submissive housewives.
Yeah,
that's the ideal for them. And a woman having a choice over their bodies or over anything is something that they object to.
We don't have an abortion problem in this country. We have an unwanted pregnancy problem and an abortion symptom. I'm waiting for the politician to come forward and say, what are we going to do about America's unwanted pregnancy problem? Because that's the only way you'll begin to solve this conflict.
Well, and we can solve it. There's stuff. There's a thing called contraception. There's a thing called birth control. They want to stop birth control.
They want to make it harder for if you don't want abortions and you want to make it harder for women to get birth control, then you don't want to stop abortions. You're just trying to get votes and donations.
Exactly. I'm lobbying my two senators, Wyden and Merkley, and my representative in the House to already start crafting whatever it needs to be done to get rid of the Comstock Act. And when we get to control the House and keep the Senate and Biden's there.
Let's hope.
Yeah.
I mean, keeping the Senate's going to be the tricky part, but they're going to get the House. They might get the House before Election Day.
I think
the Comstock Act.
Go ahead, Frank.
Repealing the Comstock Act, there might be get complicated because there might be a range war in Arizona between the territories.
Did you watch 1923, Frank?
To start riding horses into town.
No, I haven't. I haven't seen 1923. I've seen most of Yellowstone, which I enjoyed, but I haven't seen 1923.
You got to see it. Harrison Ford is great, and Helen Mirren is greater. Mm-hmm. Brian, you're a gentleman. Thank you so much for the call, man.
Take care. Bye.
Good to hear from you.
Thanks.
Let me go, if I may, to Mike in Michigan. Hi, Mike. You're on with TV's Frank.
Excuse me, John. Excuse me.
Sorry to catch you mid-bong hit.
Yeah, well, I'm in my teepee here, and thank God for Simon and Julie. But, hey, Frank, I love you.
Thanks.
Did you see 1886?
I haven't seen 1886. That's a different.
Oh, that's another one. That's another Yellowstone. And Yellowstone. You know what? Yellowstone is so over the top and crazy and insane. I love it. It's absurd, but it's super fun. I think. Hmm.
But nice. 1886 is like one of the best.
Did you see the
Sam Elliott? And Sam Elliott's in it. Of course, it's great.
Did you guys see the new one from Taylor Sheridan? It's another Yellowstone. It's called 1300 BCE. Have you guys seen that one?
I can't wait. Dying to see it.
It's amazing.
and Taylor Sheridan writes all the scripts for
all of those shows. He writes
so
all
every
of them.
Every week there's three chances to catch a Taylor Sheridan first draft. So that's exciting.
The story of how Harrison Ford flew to his house to be talked into taking this TV series is amazing.
Uh-huh.
Mike, you still there?
Go ahead. To get back on the thread of abortion.
Please.
I think I already told you about my story about my wife when we lived in upstate New York, going full term and then losing the baby.
I'm so sorry.
But because abortion rules, we had to wait 5 days, go home to our little trailer in the woods there, and wait 5 days before we could have it because of abortion rules.
Wow.
I mean,
my God.
It was living hell, especially for my wife. I mean, the baby's dead, but they can't take it. And yeah. That's one of the reasons, you know, these right-wingers of, they say this bullshit about going full term and having a baby and then killing it afterwards.
Yeah.
But that's the kind of makes it so my wife had to wait 5 days.
Yep, exactly.
For that procedure. I mean, it was ridiculous. Oh, my God. And a beautiful little redheaded girl. And the doctor, he was a Catholic, and I thought, well, maybe he's just being over-religious, but he told the best thing I could do is have another baby right away. But he was right. That little baby turned out to be a little doll, another redhead. And
I'm glad for that. I'm sorry you had to go through it, but I'm glad you guys got to have the experience of having the baby delivered safely.
Yeah, just real quick about jurors.
Real quick. Really quick, please.
In some countries, they're paid people. They're professional jurors.
Yeah.
And maybe we should do something like that. And I'm just worried about protection for these guys, the jurors, you know.
I know. But wouldn't professional jurors be even easier to bribe?
Yeah, maybe you're right. Yeah.
It might be. I don't know. I'm easy to bribe. Put me on Trump's jury. I'll take $1 million to hang it. Whatever. I'll do it.
I hope Henry Fonda wins in the jury room over Egypt.
Henry Fonda's not going to have a feeling this poor kid's innocent somehow, I suspect. Mike, thank you very much for the call. We got to take a quick break. Frank, will you stay with us till the top of the hour?
Sure.
Right back in just a second. Let's get a couple of commercial breaks in, and maybe I can talk about debt, too. 866-997-4748. We'll be right back. This is Progress.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey. Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
We are back with TV's Frank, now Radio's Frank, Frank Conniff. Frank, how can our evil army of the night follow you and keep up with all your comedic doings and all of the wonderful online shows of the Mads Are Back?
Well, they can go to themadsareback.com and also dumb-industries.com for tickets to our next show, which will be the second Tuesday of May. And we've got a really crappy sci-fi movie that we're doing. So that's going to be exciting. And yeah, just and at Frank Conniff on all the social medias, you can find me.
I cannot wait. Let's get a couple more calls in if we have a chance. Guys, try to make your comments or your threats or your request to Mr. Conniff for tax advice as brief as possible. Sean and Cali, welcome. You're on Progress.
Hey, brother. Well, I love Mr. Conniff. Of course, I love your show, John. You know, I have a new name, and I am not the guy who's going to be with decorum until we get back to the decorum. My thing is, it's Droopy Diaper Don. Droopy Diaper Don fucking can't stay awake in court, and his followers have to reconcile their brain with that fact. You know, he's Droopy Diaper Don. And by the way, that judge is a motherfucker. If he turns up the heat, man, he's going to have to, you know, be through all that. And
the judge should make it 85 degrees in the room on Monday, Frank, and just watch the rivulets of makeup sweat down Trump's face. Mm-hmm. Ruin his white collar.
Well, I would agree with that. And the other thing is, we should be taking some satisfaction in the fact that this guy who tried to, you know, he didn't attempt a coup. It came very close. I mean, I guess that's an attempt. But he really wanted to overthrow our government, and he incited a terrorist attack with all those people, and a lot of them went to prison for his dumbass. And right now, we're looking at him. We're not really looking at him, but we can visualize that he's sitting in there as a fucking indicted criminal, and we should take some solace in the fact that at least our system did get the criminal where they need to be, which is in court.
Right. You're right, Sean. Frank, I thought the most shocking thing of the week was that Fox News began reporting that Trump was falling asleep. After the second day when it happened, Fox viewers know about it now. They've been discussing it on Fox.
I mean, it's great that it's happening. Merrick Garland is a little disappointed that the trials are happening in this century because he thinks that pace is too fast to prosecute Trump, but it is good that I still believe he will never go to jail ever and won't really suffer great consequences. So I say just, you know, live in the moment. One day to enjoy the fact that he's miserable right now. He has to go to court
every day. Yeah, I think he's already suffering
great
consequences.
It sucks. He has to be there. He seems like he's pretty miserable.
What I tell everyone, stop and smell the train wreck. There's so much beautiful Schadenfreude this time of year.
Yeah,
Sean, thank you for the call, man. Thank you so much.
The ultimate foiling of the supervillain is what we want, and I don't know if that's ever going to happen.
Bill in Orlando, you're on with TV's Frank. Hello, Bill.
Good evening, Frank, John, everybody. Hey. Hope all's well. I got a quick story about I've been on six juries here locally.
Go ahead.
For two, and I was an alternate for one. And you know, here in Florida, they won't tell you if you're an alternate or a juror. I don't know about it in New York. I was picked an alternate. The old man behind me kept falling asleep. They ended up picking me, and it was an attempted first-degree murder charge. So that tells you. I don't know how it'll work in New York, whether they can pick, you know, I don't know.
I don't stay awake for anything less than second-degree murder. I will pass out for anything less than that.
Yeah.
I was an alternative juror at Largo in Los Angeles.
Really? Yeah, I was an alt juror for a while. We wore flannel.
Yeah.
Okay, man. Yep.
The other miracle thing is the Senate is still live tonight. The United States Senate is still live tonight. I'm watching who's smoozing with who. Put it on C-SPAN. It's a miracle.
Sure, I'll do that. Nothing more fun than C-SPAN on a Friday night. Well, I mean, I'm glad they're still in session. Let's hope that what I really care about is that the House of Representatives has a very busy day tomorrow. I cannot impress enough. Guys, check the news tomorrow and see what happens. This Mike Johnson thing has just been fascinating this week. And the fact that this guy, who I don't think much of, might have set his whole career on fire just to do the right thing is unprecedented. Bill, I thank you very much. And Frank, I say goodbye to you with a really great piece of news. Are you ready for this? Over 4,000 Volkswagen workers in the state of Tennessee just joined the UAW in a landslide. They are now the first American workers to win a union at a non-union car company in decades. Sean Fain for president 2028.
Nice.
Yeah. I'll take whatever positive I can get where I can get it. Mr. Conniff, I love when you join us on Fridays, man. You've made this job fun again.
It's great. Great to be here. Thanks for having me.
Thank you. One more time, the best way to follow you?
At Frank Conniff, themanserback.com, dumb-industries.com.
Right on. Frank, you're the best. Thank you so much.